I'm Natalie Walton, and this is Imprint, a podcast about creating a home and life you love. Each week, I'm here to share with you some of the biggest lessons I've learned during my career and life. Some of them I wish I'd learned a lot sooner because they would have saved me a huge amount of time, stress, and even money. Many of these ideas could have accelerated my journey as a creative and business owner. I also feature interviews with inspiring creatives, entrepreneurs, and experts to help you focus on what's most important in your life. Today, I'm going to interview interior designer Simone Matthews. Before we start today's episode, I just wanted to thank you for all of your beautiful comments and feedback on this podcast. If you haven't done so already, it would mean so much if you could please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you're listening to the podcast today. It really does help other like-minded creatives out there find this content and help them on their journey. Okay, back to today's episode. Hello, everyone. I hope you're all well. I have been busy this week creating some content for an exciting product that I've created for Imprint House, my online shop. We are going to launch a newspaper called Imprint Journal. And so we've had a couple of photo shoots at a couple of different locations. So I can't wait to share that with you. Look out for it at imprinthouse.net. In the meantime, I have also been interviewing a few inspiring creatives before the year wraps up, and I'm very excited to share this interview with Simone, who I came into contact with a few years ago now. I think it was when I was compiling a feature for Country Style magazine, but it was certainly in relation to her project Soul of Gerangong, which is an incredible project that she worked on, and she will go into more detail in the interview. But then I've been following her journey since then, and I saw that she was actually up in Byron Bay, and we had been speaking about meeting up to do an interview, and I thought, okay, let's do it now. So she was actually staying in the same area where I live, which is Binnaburra, which is just outside of Bangalore. And I'm a big believer that sometimes you've just got to strike while the iron is hot and take the opportunities that you get that are right in front of you. So I did, and we met up, and it was so lovely to hear her journey and obviously meet her as well and chat through a few things. So I hope that you enjoy listening to this interview with Simone and learning more about her creative journey. Hello, Simone. Thank you so much for welcoming me into this space. It's not actually your home. You're on holiday in Byron Bay or the area. And I had to take the opportunity to interview you. We'd been speaking about trying to organize something, so this seemed like the great chance to do it. So thank you for taking time out of your day. So I've got a few questions for you, and we just want to, like, I guess, start at the beginning about a little bit about your childhood. And, you know, were you creative? Is that something that was a thread in your childhood, or what kind of those early years did you have?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for coming to my holiday property that's not mine, but gorgeous place, which I can't believe that you call this home. It is stunning. But yeah, to my childhood, I would say I was not creative at all. Like, I was the child who, like, art, drawing, I was like, no, I did not like that at all. I remember when, like, if I fast forward to high school years, I think I was literally the only person who didn't do art at school. So I would more describe myself as more like an organized child. And I fall into, like, I'm the youngest of four girls. So I think I was always more ahead of my times. I was always wanting to be like them and be older. So I think I just had, like, this drive in me. So that kind of creative path, I fought it, but then when I think about it from a different angle, I was always the child who'd be rearranging her bedroom. I'd be saving up my pocket money to go buy new furniture, or I'd be finding old pieces on the side of the road and be painting them to bring them in my room. So there was kind of, like, I would say not creative, but then when I look in a different way, there was definitely kind of those avenues there.
And so what about then when you kind of got to those high school years where you start to have to think about, what am I going to do when I leave school? What were your thoughts then? Did you have any idea?
Yeah, you know what? Again, it's always kind of comes back to my sisters, because they were really, like, picked all their academic pathways and they knew what they wanted to do. So they did like the physics and the chemistry and the math. And I remember going into high school like as if I didn't have a care in the world. Like there was never a pressure on me to feel like I had to succeed or have something I had to do. Maybe because I always kind of fell back and thought someone would always catch me. So when I went to high school, I was like, I'm going to pick subjects that I just love, that I enjoy doing. And I didn't really think about what I was going to do. So like at school, I studied Indonesian because I knew that you went to Bali on an excursion. So that was like how I did all my choices. And then when it came to the end doing the HSC, I actually did really, really well. And because I am like someone who puts 110% effort into things. So then when I had this TER, and I had all these options, I was just like, oh, wow, what am I going to do? So I actually applied for uni to go do a Bachelor of Science and Nutrition because I wanted to be a dietitian at that point because I was really into my health. But I deferred uni for 3 years straight. I had saved a lot of money from my part-time jobs during high school and I went straight over to London because two of my sisters were living there. So I went and traveled first and deferred uni and then I ended up coming back and got a job as a PA to a very well-known businessman and it kind of just followed that pathway. So again, no, I had no direction, but it all just happened.
Okay, that's interesting. So then you didn't end up going through with the university?
No, I never went to uni after I was a PA for like 3 or 4 years. You may remember FAI Insurances, so Rodney Adler. So I was his PA. So I got thrown straight away as I would have been like a 19-year-old into this world of, you know, every name, you know, the Packers, the Murdochs, they were my everyday people that I was surrounded with. I was this young, naive, you know, not really understanding what was going on, but I think it taught me that opportunities are endless. And so that's kind of the pathway. And then I left there because I decided to go back and travel again, went back to Europe, traveled away. And then I came back and I really had an interest in property. I went and did my real estate license, did real estate for a while, and then went, I love houses, but I'm not into selling them. I loved the power of a house had. I really got connected with that emotive feel that people had when they came into houses. So did real estate, left real estate again, went off traveling yet again, and then came back and I ended up becoming the national marketing manager for VLUX Skylights. So then I ended up in the building industry and that's kind of my pathway through. So it kind of, it's very much like, you know, this windy road to where I've kind of ended up today.
I love that because it's so often the way, isn't it, that when you're on that journey, sometimes you have no sense of where on earth it's going to take you. And sometimes you might even question, is this a waste of time? Should I be doing something else? You might look at what other people are doing and the choices that they've made. But then over time, and when you look back, you see this all makes sense. Like, this is why I am where I am right now.
Absolutely.
That's like, amazing.
Yeah. So it's really interesting to actually take a moment to look back on it.
Yeah. And so then how did you then, okay, so then you started to be more immersed in the building industry. Yeah. So I know of you from your past project, which was Soul of Gerringong, which got a lot of publicity and, you know, was a beautiful home. But what were the steps up until that property?
It involves meeting a builder and marrying a builder very much so. So I met Ben at the same time I was working at VLUX. I think we were married like 14 months after we met. And my kind of pathway came, I suppose, through the building and the admin side versus the creative side. So I was working as the marketing manager, but I was really invested in building up his business. So I was doing all the marketing side for him, but then I was also typing up all the quotes. So all these years of me sitting there typing up, you know, supply and in-store, RE, blah, 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 like all those details, it just kept sinking in. And during this time, we had started to renovate, flip homes, do our own. And then I started just organically helping with client projects and people asking me to be involved. So again, it was Ben. He said, you need to move into this. And I was at that crossroads, which so many of us get to when I had my first child, of that corporate ladder or embracing motherhood. And I knew that I couldn't do both. So I left the corporate world, became stay-at-home mum, really got more into the business. And Ben bought me a there was a course at ISCD and it was a day as a designer. So I thought I was going to go and I was going to meet with an interior designer and she was going to tell me all about how amazing the career was. Instead, that day, it basically let you touch on all different types of design. And most of the day was spent drawing. And I went, no, this took me back to like my school years. And I was like, no, I do not like drawing. This is not like, no. So I did that. And it took me 3 years to go, yeah, you know what? Design is for me. And then realize that that part of the career was only one small part, one that I needed to understand to be able to go forward with. So spent that day as a designer worked in two ways. It kind of set me back on really the path that I wanted to go on. But then I went and studied for 3 years at ISCD. And I say that I did it the opposite way, which I tend to do with a lot of things, where I already knew what I knew I had just that vision, you know, the ability for design, but I decided I wanted to know why I knew what I knew and went and studied to kind of do it, to basically match the two up. So, yeah.
It's funny you mentioned that because I did an interview with Cara and she mentioned that you guys met there and connected during that time. So sometimes that can be one of the great things when you do study is kind of those connections that you meet with people, you know, along the journey.
Yeah. Like Cara has always been my biggest supporter. And I remember when we started that course and we were both kind of like, is this really for us? Like, because everyone was very new to the industry and we both, you know, had our own ways of coming there. And it was those connections as well as like Lisa Kohler became my educator. So it was all, again, all these pieces of the puzzle just, you know, started to form together.
So then how did the soul of Geragon come along? So you'd flipped a few homes and then what happened?
So before Soul of Geragon, I had done quite a bit of design work, client work. We'd sold a house in Cronulla where we lived and it caused quite a stir because, you know, it was actually meant to be our forever home, but yeah, let's just say I don't think we can do forever. So I knew the house was special, but I didn't realize the hype it was going to create. So I got a lot of client work off the back of that and it was quite interesting because I thought that's what I wanted. And as soon as I started to do quite a lot of client work, I realized it actually was emptying my cup, not filling my cup up. So I knew that doing my own projects was always my number one priority and client work would just be on the side. So we had done that for a while. We'd done another development and we were living our safe, little, happy, gorgeous, like we had an amazing life. Like we had a construction company with about 30 guys working for us. We were thriving, but there was something, there was just something that was still kind of missing. And we went to the coastal town of Geragon for a friend's 40th. And as I drove in, I just saw this old farmhouse and I was just like, oh, it just caught my eye. And then later on, I think it was the next day, I went up with my girlfriends and they wanted to look in the shops. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to go down here. I happened to notice this house. I'm just going to check it out. I walked out the front of the farmhouse and it just felt like for the first time in years, I'd just taken a big breath out. I didn't know what it was. I didn't even realize the property was for sale. And I rung Ben and I said, I've just found us a house to buy. And he's gone, yeah, right, whatever, because we do that all the time. And I was like, okay, I didn't think much of it. Walked back to the main street to meet my friends, looked in the real estate window, and there was that house. It was actually on the market. So I get back on the phone, ring Ben, say, the house is for sale. We're actually going to buy it. He's still like, yeah, whatever. So fast forward, we ended up buying the house. We had no goal to move from where we lived. No goal at that time to pack up everything we had. But we were just like, you know what? Why not? Why can't we, you know, why can't we do this? Why can't we just not follow the norm? And the one thing that I think drew us to it and drew us to opening accommodation was we knew that when together Ben and I work, that we create something special. And we know that when we sell houses, when we're creating them for clients, that people love the feeling we create in houses. But the thing is, we can only ever share it with one family. So we were like, what about if we turn this into accommodation and instead of just being able to, you know, share what we do with one person, if we open the doors and we can share it en masse, then how amazing would that be? And that was kind of where it went from. There was no business plan, no financial goal. It was just, let's just share, let's give back of what the power that we know is kind of our skill and the gift that we can give to people. And that was how Soul of Gerringong was created.
Yeah. So what I want to ask you about that is, I mean, obviously by that point, you've done a range of different projects. You've probably learned a heap of lessons along the way. And I'm guessing that you've also got a stronger sense of your own personal style, which is something that I know people ask me a lot about. They really struggle with how to have a clear understanding when they like lots of different styles. So do you feel that you had had a stronger sense of your own personal style by the time you got to that project? Or what are your thoughts on that? Like,
I believe that every house has its own style and personality. So, you know, my style and design has definitely grown up. Like if I think of, you know, the first house we flipped, you kind of go, oh, wow, what was I thinking? But to me, the farmhouse it sold just, it demanded its own personality and its own style. And people always say to me, I love your style. And I'm like, Soul's actually not my style. What I created there paid homage to that house, but was able to create a new type of style and design and standard in accommodation. So how I approach it is I'm always about bringing in three styles together. So I call it my 70-20-10 rule. So I'm like 70% of one style, 20% of another, and then a final 10% that pulls it together. So I always look for those three elements, and but they can be made up. Like I always say to people, they're not technical. Like I described the Soul Farmhouse as classic coastal rustic. And then that just every decision I made along the way had to fall into that and then work with the proportions. So, yeah, I think I'm very big on every property should not look the same. And that's probably what I strive to do if I'm working on any projects. When someone comes to me, I love Soul, can you create that for me? And I'm like, nope. And I'm like, no, I can't do that. We can take inspiration of what you like from it, but it's not going to feel like that house does. So that's how I approach it.
Yeah, I have a very similar approach in the sense that I really believe you have to respond to the existing architecture. You got to respond to the location of the home as well as like your own personal story, because, you know, we all bring different elements to it and things that feel right for us. And you got to really tap into that. So what feels rustic for you might feel different. You know, someone else has got a very different idea of what rustic means. So, you know, it's that kind of idea.
Yeah.
So what were some of the big lessons then you learnt with that project?
I think the first one is to A, back yourself. You know, what happened with Soul of Gerringong was I'd always done my work and I hadn't really put myself out there. So I was always happy for houses to do the talking and, you know, I was the back end of it. So as the more people started to recognize this property and we started to follow along the journey, I did start to kind of second guess myself. So I did have to kind of have some pep talks to be like, you know what, you've got this, just do what you normally do. So that was definitely a big lesson for me. Number two is definitely understand what is important and what's your priority, because like any project, renovation, build, everything goes over budget, and you always come to a decision where even though you might love that, I don't know if it's those antique brass taps, but the decision is being able to finish the build. There's always sacrifices. So really understanding what's important to be able to bring the whole feeling together in a house. And then number three is always, to me, the lesson I learned in that build is just, you know what, just go for it. Sometimes you just got to go, you know what? It's different to second guessing yourself, but we definitely got to the position of going, we have put so much in this property. Imagine if this doesn't turn out, and we just remember, you know, we got to the end, you know, of the bank account and just going, oh, okay, let's just do it. Because if we do it half-hearted, that's what the result's going to be. So let's just go for it. Hope for the best, you know, prepare for the worst, but hope for the best. So that was definitely a big, big learning.
Yeah. And what about in terms of, can you share some insights into your like design process of how you approach it? I know everyone's very different.
Yeah. Yep. I always believe, like, you know, it's back to our mood boards, vision boards, but I always, always start with a mood board. And I think that people miss this step a lot because to me, the mood board is understanding the feeling, and because feeling's everything for me in a property, and I believe it should be for everyone. So starting with the mood board that really makes you understand what you're trying to create, that is always step one for me. Then step two is going on to, you know, your design board, and that's now really starting to bring in the textures and the elements and kind of a little bit more of, you know, how the space is going to look. Then I go into spatial planning because to me, spatial planning would be just under a feeling of a property. And, you know, one of the things I would say is definitely my area of expertise is understanding that. So really understanding how the space is going to be used, how it's going to function, you know, if it's someone's home or the holiday property, where are people going to gravitate to? Where are they going to gather? What are the spaces that need to have, like, you know, that's got to have the priority, knowing that if I need to move a wall by 300 mil at that stage, it's so easy on paper versus when it's built going, oops, got that one wrong. So the spatial planning is a big, big step. Then I move into the spec board. So then that's our actual finishes now. So once I've got that, then, you know, back onto a lot of the computer work. But that's how I approach every single project. And if I ever miss one of those steps, I can see that it's not my best work. So they're kind of my four steps that I would do as a design process.
And lots of people who listen to this podcast, they're kind of on the beginning of their journey of creating homes and, you know, going on that process. So can you share, like, so what do you literally use, like programs and, sort of the techie side?
Yeah, well, you know what, I keep tech as simple as possible because often as designers, we have it all in our head. So, yeah, it's about making a beautiful mood board, but really I would prefer to spend my time on the actual project. So I use PowerPoint for mood boards. It's so simple. I used to use InDesign, but I was like, I can use PowerPoint and it's like quarter of the time compared to InDesign. So that's where I'm going to go. PowerPoint, SketchUp is what I use for floor planning, spatial planning, my models. And I can use SketchUp, but again, I will outsource that because it's not my area of expertise. So I can do, you know, a draft one, and then I'd prefer to give it, I do have a junior designer that works for me, but before I had her, I'd outsource it because I would go, is that an efficient use of my time versus getting someone else to do it? And then I literally used Word and Excel. That is it. No, yeah. Like just keeping it as simple as possible.
Yeah, no, it's great. And so obviously a big part of the Soul of Gerringong process was turning it into an Airbnb. And I know that you have now kind of created courses and sort of a whole community around that. What were some of the big lessons you learned about that, about, you know, Airbnb being a property?
You know what? What I learned at the time, there was no resources. So I remember once we had our vision and yes, we're going to take over the South Coast and create this accommodation. I was like, well, we know how to design. We know how to build. We don't know anything about holiday properties rather than being a guest at so many, so we knew what we liked. But I thought that I could turn to Google and it would give me all the answers, or I'd find, you know, a course that I could sign up, and there was nothing. And I was like, wow, like I'm pretty much on my own here. So I reached out to a lot of amazing people, and most of them up here in Byron, who were very giving with their information, like Talia Lowry from Byron Beach Abodes at the time. And I can't remember her name, but she created Bask and Stow. And she gave me some amazing information. I remember right at the time I was going, but I'm like, my accommodation's not Byron. And she was like, yeah, but that is your biggest asset, because if you do this right, people will find you. Then they'll find Gerringong. We're in Byron. They find Byron and they have to find us. So that was like a light bulb moment went off for me. But yeah, that's what I found with creating, like, I actually don't call it Airbnb. I believe that we don't need to sit under a brand. Nothing against Airbnb, but that's why I've got the nickname we use in our community, HPOs, holiday property owners, and because it's so diverse. So I believe as HPOs, you know, we're all individual, and that's like setting up the accommodation. It's a business. So many people just think, oh, I'll create this, you know, beautiful home and open my doors and see you later. Where I teach people, and what I learnt, and you know, the costly way as well, is I'm a CEO. I'm the accounts person. I'm the marketing person. I'm the customer service. You are everything. So once you work out where your strengths and weaknesses are, then that's when you work out what you need to outsource. Because again, for some people, they can do it all. But I also believe if you set this up as a business model, because to me, holiday properties are about, you know, creating a lifestyle you don't need a holiday from. So, and a lot of people have them so they don't have to work that 9-to-5 job, or, you know, if there's such a thing as passive income. So it's about knowing what you need to hand over, and knowing that when your guests arrive, that they're expecting a well-polished business, you know, a home that feels amazing, and there's all different expectations based on price points, but it's a business they're turning up to. And just the same as if they were turning up at a hotel, there are all the things that you really need to know that setting up a holiday property, it is a business. Yeah.
Yeah, no, so true. Mm. And what about then? So you decided to sell Soul of Gerringong,
yeah.
Which was, it was during COVID, wasn't it?
Oh my goodness, it was. You know what? So right from the beginning, we knew we'd sell Soul of Gerringong. So we were like, let's create this business. Let's set a new standard of accommodation. Let's share it. But we also knew that we don't do forever. So we were like, let's build it up. Let's see if we can create a brand. Let's create a profitable business with the goal to sell it. So it was always in the back of our head, when. So we picked the perfect timing. We thought we'd blocked out 6 months earlier, a month of weekends, which, because we were so heavily booked, we've got a month to do open houses. Oh, this is going to be amazing. And the first open we had was just when we weren't in complete lockdown, but it was, you know, I think days away. Had one open house, you know, so many people through, and then we still could have had the second open, but I just went, no, we live in this tiny little town, there's all these people from Sydney coming in. Oh, I had these visions of the whole town hunting me down. So yeah, we were meant to have our big marketing campaign. Instead, it went the other way. We didn't pull it off the market, but we just let it sit idle. And we closed down the accommodation business, which nearly every other person did. So we went from having this, oh my goodness, we're going to sell our business, to, wow, that didn't go well. Here we are with a closed business. And we also found ourselves building another accommodation business whilst not knowing what was going on. So if we fast forward, got out of COVID, and really it actually worked in our favor, because we had a group of people, like about 3 or 4, who just kept saying, when can we come through? When can we see Soul? So if anything, it kind of kept the anticipation going. So as soon as people could come back down, we weren't doing opens. We let 2 people through the house. Both of them wanted to buy it. At the end of the day, people bought it. And yeah, it's only settled like 2 weeks ago. We only handed it over. So it's very, very recent. So,
wow.
Yeah. So
how did you feel about letting go of that? Because that's something that people sort of struggle with as well, or knowing when to let go.
Yeah, well, the second part, knowing when to let go, that was a challenge, because we, you know, yes, 6 months ago we set the date, but if I'm honest, every year we're like, okay, do we sell? I mean, there was just something telling us it wasn't the right timing. Actually selling it and handing it over, probably one of the only properties I've actually been okay at handing over, because I feel like, to me, when I create these houses, and especially because this property basically created my brand and it allowed people to know who I am, it gave me a platform and probably put my design work on the map. I felt like the property had given me so much. And so I think of houses like babies. So I feel like, you know, this baby had grown up, it was nurtured, and it was time for it to go out to the big wide world, because I still love that property, but I'd probably fallen out of love with it. And it was time for someone to hand it over to someone who, you know, didn't maybe have the work goggles on that I call, like I did. So I actually found it, quite easy. And I think the reason is, one of my visions was create this business, create this place everyone can come and share, and on sell it to someone who will continue with the brand and the business. And I didn't have control over that because the other person who was interested in purchasing it, they were going to use it as their holiday home. So it wasn't going to be a business. So the fact that it's still continuing on, it doesn't feel like it's left because it's still like it's out there in the world. So I don't really think I've had to really disconnect from it. So it was actually really easy.
Yeah. And then in the meantime, you've sort of been doing this other project, which is called The Pause. Is that, that's also in Gerringong, is it? Yeah. Or South Coast?
Gerringong. Yeah. It's literally on the back fence of Solar Gerringong.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that.
Most people don't. And I probably did that as a business decision at the time. So it's a subdivision down there because it's on like just under half an acre. And we, that block of land was originally going to be part of Seoul. And we were like, no, let's just hang on to that because at one stage we're going to do a duplex. And it just didn't sit right. Like our financial head should have done the duplex like years ago. We should have lived in it whilst we're building all this. But there was just something like we just didn't want to do it. And so we had this block of land and we were like, well, we can still create a property there. And because we've left the town, we wanted a place that we can go back to. So, and excuse the pun, but we want a place where we can go and pause. And we're like, let's just create it. Let's see what happens. Kind of went down the same path as Seoul. And yeah, it's completely different to Seoul, but yeah, literally next door.
So that was a new build, was it?
Brand new build. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And have you done new builds before? Or okay, so yeah, that was familiar territory.
Yeah. We do like, it's probably a mix of renos and new builds. And I personally prefer renovations over new builds because I find renovations more, they're more challenging, or not even challenging, but you've got to be like really think about, oh, how can I make it work? You know, you're governed by the walls or the space, where new builds is like, well, really, you can make anything work if you get like, if you're strategic with it. So it's, yeah, renos, I think I just find more, they're more fulfilling for me. But this new build was actually really, was almost like I had my reno brain on because it was only on a 450 square meter block, yet it can accommodate 12 guests. So if you think of The Pause is like a Bali villa, doesn't, you know, it's not the Bali villa facade, but you know, you've been to Bali, like it's bigger houses, smaller yards, but it's all open plan living and it's just got that holiday vibe. So yeah, it was, it actually, I even look back and go, wow, The Pause, it really feels like it's, you know, an abundance of space. So that spatial planning did come into play there.
So how did you approach then the style of the home? Because you were saying before that you're often really guided by the home itself and how that dictates the style. So then when you've got that blank canvas, how do you go about sort of creating the style and the look?
Well, again, went back to the feeling. So I wanted to create this property to be a place where I could come, guests could come and just feel like instantly as soon as they arrive that they can just take a big breath out and they just feel calm. So straight away, my 70-20-10 was organic, minimalist and classic. So, you know, when you open the doors at The Pause, we've got these gorgeous antique timber doors. It's concrete flooring and there's just this one brass light. That's it. So it's just, the styling was, everything was less is more, but had to have feeling. And the, I was able to do that with, like with all the materials I had in them. I wanted them to feel like they'd always been there, that they weren't brand new and shiny. So I think that was the big key and why, if I use my 70-20-10, the organic was a big part of that property.
So another thing I wanted to ask you about, which I think you're really good at, is using social media. Obviously, that's a huge part of the success of Soul of Gerringong and getting the name out there. It's a huge part of if you've got a holiday home that you want to promote and so on. So what is your strategy in terms of how you show up on social media? I always feel like you are very intentional about what you share and you're really clear on what you want to share. It comes across very kind of confident and that you, you know, in a very friendly way, yeah, and, you know, nothing to say to that. But it, yeah, you just seem to have this very clear sense of how you choose to show up. Can you talk about that?
Thank you for that. Because you know what, sometimes when you're putting things on social media, you don't know how people portray it. So that definitely has filled my cup up, you saying that. I think with social media, my strategy with it is I want to provide solutions to challenges for people versus going on there with a challenge of like, you know, instead of going, oh my God, like it's so hard doing this build, or oh my goodness, which one do I pick if it's a material, or coming to a holiday property like, quick, there's only one more, you know, weekend. I don't want it to be like that. I want it to be, you know, I've gone through a challenge, which for me, in the space I'm in, is obviously design, build, holiday properties. And, you know, I have 20 years of that, so it's quite easy to come up with content. And the solution, so if I think about, you know, if I'm talking about this next build we're doing, and I'm like, so I'm going to share the process of how I start. So I'm going to do X, Y, Z, and that's how you can do it. So I try to get into the emotion the people are feeling and know that like-minded people or people are approaching it and don't have the resources that I have, that if I can create content that puts that out in a really simple, clear and authentic manner, that they're going to relate to it. And to me, social media is like, I wouldn't have a business and a brand without it. So I have so much to owe to it, and I've met so many amazing people who are now my friends in it. But I really don't like social media to be a highlight reel. And yes, if you look on my feed, it's all very pretty and curated photos, but I do try to mix them up with real photos that I've taken as well, because I know that we all can struggle by comparing ourselves with others. So my intention with anything I post on social media and the people I connect with is that they never want to feel like they compare themselves to me. And if someone can learn something and take something away, my job is done. And that's why I'll keep showing up. I'll give you permission. If I ever switch and I start not doing that, then that's my time to leave social media. That's kind of how I really try to approach it as much as I can.
Yeah. And so what about in terms of, again, getting nitty gritty, like do you schedule your posts in advance? Do you like what's your strategy in terms of actually how you use it? Do you use filters?
No. Again, you know how I say things just tend to happen. No planning. I did try and use, you know, the program later. I actually really didn't like it. I'm that person, and it's not good from a personal point of view because I know that I'm on my phone too much. But if I'm just like, oh, I have to post it then and there. And I think maybe that's the connection people get from me, because I'm actually feeling it. Something's just come. There is no plan. Even like the sponsored series, we just did with the pause. I had it outsource the social media for about a week of it. And it just was not, it wasn't right. The right messaging wasn't coming across. And I just went, you know what? I just have to do this. I have to post it. So no, there's no planning. I wish there was like a secret to it. But to me, that's how it will come back authentic, the messaging. So yeah.
Do you ever not know what to say?
Then I won't post. So yeah. If I don't have, because like I'm posting because I choose to post. And if I don't have something to post, then I just like, I won't post it. You know, of course, there's some times when I've gone, no, quickly post it, no, delete it. But if I don't have to post. So I'm like, I don't feel like I have to show up every single day. Yes, it was different in the sponsored series, but I actually felt like, I wanted to show up because I had all these amazing brands behind me. So I actually felt like I wanted to share why I love these products. So I didn't even feel forced in that time. So yeah, it's always because I feel it. And if I don't feel it, then I won't go on there.
And also what I wanted to ask you about in relation to that is, so obviously, you said before that you would get people doing client work, and I'm sure that you get lots and lots of people asking you to do client work for you, given the projects that you have created. So do you do that now, or do you still want to just focus on your own thing? And then how do you say no, or how do you work out what you want to do and what's most important for you?
Yeah, I'm really bad at saying no. So I'm trying to get better at that, to go, you know what? Not yet. I find if I use that, it's a lot easier than just going no. But yes, so I do client work. So at the minute, I have 5 client projects on the go. And we've just got our, we've just purchased a house. So we've got our own one, which will make it six. And that to me is too much. As I said before, I've got a junior designer who works for me. So the result of having that many clients is because I actually love the projects and I fall in love with houses and the people. And then I'm like, oh, because I can just see it. But it's not, I've had a few meetings with my business coach to go, I love client work, but it actually just leaves me so empty. And I feel like it steals my time away from my family. And, you know, more often than not, Ben and I are on a project together. So it also steals our dinner conversations as well. So as much as you're sitting there saying, so tell me about your day, you're like, oh, and by the way, so that's a real boundary issue. So I think that's kind of where the client, you know, focus comes in. So going forward, I'm not going to say no to clients. I'm just going to hold space for one or two clients only per year. And if it's not the right fit or I don't have the space, it's going to be a straight no, because I've learned from really getting burnt out and, like, you know, having the ups and downs with my mental health that it's not actually good for me in the long run. So client work will be to a minimum. We're doing our own project and we want to be able to do another holiday project, you know, in the next 2 years. And then with online education, so I've, as you said before, I've got my online guide for holiday property owners. I've got a guide coming out on how to think like a designer, and then one on how to work with your builder and styling made easy. So I really love online education because, probably like you, I love writing, and it wasn't something that I thought that would come natural to me. But if I'm like prioritizing my week of work, yes, my client work comes first and the business side of things, but really I'm like, I just want to get all that done because I want to write, because I've got so much in my head that I know that I can give to people to help them. But I can, if I'm only helping one person, kind of like how we created Solar Gerringong to share en masse. So if I can share all these tips and tricks and these amazing resources that I have, and I can share them en masse with people in a way that doesn't drain me, but by sharing fills my cup up. So that's kind of where I am. So in a long way, yes, there's design work, but it will be on the minimum. We have our accommodation businesses and then the online education and kind of sponsors and brand things going forward. It's definitely more the main direction.
So I'm going to ask you one last question before we get into the sort of quick Q&A. So you mentioned that you're working with a business coach. So why, I guess, and also what are some of the things that you've learnt through that process?
Business coach is amazing because they keep you on track. So, you know, if you're with a friend, a colleague, and you're like, hey, I've got this idea, and they're like, yeah, that sounds amazing, you should do that. They always back you, but have they put really the time and thought that you're wanting? So I find with a business coach, they go, yep, that's all great, but no, you don't have space for it. So all these ideas, we're going to park over here. This is the one we're going to work on. And they basically make you step it down, keep you accountable. So to me, it's a way for me to probably set boundaries with a business coach. And the business coach I'm with is Megan Della Camina. And she's very, very in tune with her feminine side. And you probably pick up on it, but I'm very more masculine focused. And I always thought I'd have a male business coach. And she has a way of like just getting me to really think in my feminine side versus making all my decisions from the masculine way. And she just softens everything. Yet she is, you know, corporate ex-IBM, like, but I don't know, she just has a, they keep you on track is what I would say. And that's why I always recommend to people, if they're in that space, they will tell you what you don't necessarily want to hear. Friends and family tell you, yeah, that's amazing, you can do anything. Like, you know, if I ask my mom, oh, of course you can, darling, everything's possible. So I think they really give you honest, true advice and direction. So yeah.
I love that. Mm. We're going to have to investigate that.
You would actually be really, and she's does online education as well. So I was up here in Byron 2 weeks ago staying at Atlantic, and Megan was up there at the same time, and I was running content, and then we have check-in time. So if you ever get to that stage where you're like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? I'm not the person to do this. you'll go have your session and you're like, I've got this. Yep, I can take over the world. So, yeah, really, really good.
You'll have to give me her contact details so I can put it in the show notes.
Yes.
All right. So, as I mentioned, I've got some quick Q&As that we go through at the end of every episode. The first question is always the one that people struggle with the most, but nevertheless, I think you've got this. I'm confident with you, Simone. Which five words best describe you?
Okay, I'm definitely passionate, determined, a risk taker. I'll say inspiring because I know that people get inspired by what I do, and giving because there's nothing more that I love than being able to give to other people.
What's the best life or career lesson you've learned?
This one comes from my good friend Lisa Messenger. I don't even know what book it was in. But there was something about, you know, whenever you're making a decision and you're scared and you got that fear, always go jump off the cliff. So if that's worst case scenario, if you can cope and deal with that, then you can always work backwards and imagine if you fly. So, yeah.
What's your proudest career achievement?
I think it would have to be Solar Gerringong, you know, just knowing that I've been able to have, in my own little way, impact on people's lives by being able to share the space.
What's been your best decision?
Packing up from Sydney and moving to Gerringong.
Who inspires you?
Can I have a couple? I'm always like, can I just have one more? Lisa Messenger. She definitely, you know, now we're friends, but along this journey before I met her, her books always just gave me that inspiration that I wasn't, I suppose the word's weird, I wasn't weird that I didn't want to fit into that 9-to-5 life. So she inspired me to, you know, dream bigger. And then from an accommodation side, I stumbled across, would have been right at the beginning when Atlantic opened, Kimberly Amos's story in Inside Out magazine. And so she's always been an inspiration, you know, watching what she's done and how she's been able to create such a magical feeling and keep that going for so many years.
What are you passionate about?
Freedom. Everything's freedom for me, like my values. If I feel stuck or, you know, tied into something, it just doesn't fit right. So everything I do, it's got to give me freedom.
What dream do you still want to fulfill?
I would love to buy an old hotel and do it up and have that as my business.
What are you reading at the moment?
Oh, my client's book, Taria Pitt, Happy. It's a really good book and I'm reading it, almost finished. I'm going to give it to all my children as well.
And what are you currently listening to? I know you said earlier on that you listen to a lot of podcasts, so can you share some of them?
Your podcast.
Oh,
I've been listening to yours. And you ask the right questions because there's a lot of people on there that I already know their story, but I've learned so much by listening to theirs. So your podcast, you're doing a really good job.
Oh, thank you. What piece of advice would you give to your younger self?
I said this to my children today when they're like, when are we going home? What time's the aeroplane tomorrow? Live for today. You know, not living for yesterday, not for tomorrow, live for today.
Great. Now I'm going to ask one last little one because I realize I haven't asked it. And I do think it's something that, you know, you're a mum of four boys. How do you juggle that kind of, I know some people hate using the word work-life balance, but I actually think that you do have to find some kind of harmony or flow between those two states. How do you negotiate that with yourself and with life? And
yeah, you know what? I think it, to me, it's like there's this work-life balance, but they're never level. They're never like even, you know, if you think, you know, bananas on one end, apples on the other. So I go, if I'm really deep in work or a project or I'm writing an online course, or I've got a client that I have to finish this, then my head is in work and my family, we've got this understanding that, well, mum has to do this work. So you guys, I'm not going to be home when you get home from school and you can cook dinner and you can, you know, do all the washing. But then as soon as that changes and something happens with the kids or there's something, you know, Tully who's in year 5's trying out for school captain. So I'm like, right, I'm on because I've really got to pay my attention with the kids. So to me, it's just about, it's not balanced all at one time. Something is your priority and you're going to give your time to that. And then as soon as you finish that, you go back and then pay your attention to more the family personal side.
Yeah, yeah, that's a big part. And now at the moment you've been enjoying some family time. So,
yes.
Which is really great.
Yeah, it has been. It's good.
Thank you so much for sharing some time with me on this this little holiday that you've had. I'm so glad that we were able to sneak in a little bit of time. It's been so lovely to hear more about your journey. So thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for coming and meeting in person finally.
All right, everyone. I hope you've enjoyed this interview and learning more about Simone's creative journey. Before you go, if you haven't done so already, can you please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast? It really does help get the word out to other people who also might find it helpful. You'll find show notes for this episode at nataliewalton.com/podcast/31, because this is episode 31. Thank you to Jaeger Media for producing this podcast and the people of the Bundjalung Nation where it was recorded. I look forward to connecting again soon. I'm Natalie Walton, and you've been listening to Imprint.